All right, Shavuot say, good morning. Let's begin. We have a beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. A lot to do. Today's daf is Chaf Beis, 22. We are picking up on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, 21b. And we are picking up at the Esvei. It's two, four lines up from the bottom. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Sammy and Malka Esterson in memory of their parents, the Shi'urim for the month of Kislev, dedicated memory of their parents, Ludwig Stiefel, Yitzchok Leib, and Aaron HaKohen, and Hinda Esterson, Hinda Bas Henech Ephraim. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamos will have an Aliyah, and the families in Nechama. So we'll say, so let's begin. So remember, we left off yesterday in the fascinating case regarding, well, the Mishnah's case, regarding someone who could go ahead and plow a field and violate multiple violations with one act of plowing. So remember again, along those same lines, the Gemara says the following. So we'll say, remember again, the Gemara then, we left off yesterday with the Gemara making a statement that the truth is one could add on additional prohibitions for Zorea B'yamtiv. Remember again, after we established that the case of Kilayim is one in which you're covering the seeds with dirt, in which case, again, not only should one be chayav for Choresh, but one should also be chayav for Zorea, for seeding, for sowing. To which the Gemara says, no, because ein chilek melachas b'yamtiv. That ultimately, again, we do not differentiate between, or I should say, in yamtiv, one act cannot generate multiple melacha liability on yamtiv, that is only a din on Shabbos. To which the Gemara says, Eisvei, is that true? So Eisvei Abaye raises the kashav, ein chilek melachas b'yamtiv. Rabbi say, is that true? That there's no distinction on melachas. What that means is, Rabbi say, again, if I perform one act, and that one act results in multiple melachas, multiple violations, that I'm only going to be chayiv once on yamtiv, is that true? Vatanan, hamavashal gid b'chalof. Rabbi say, listen to this. If someone goes ahead and cooks the gid hanosha, and they cook it in milk, biyamtiv, and this is happening on yamtiv, va'achlo, and you eat it, lo kechamish, you get five sets of malchus. So what do you get malchus for? Lo kemishum ochel gid, you get, number one, is because you ate gid hanosha, v'lo kemishum mevashal biyamtiv, and you also go ahead and you get malchus for cooking on yamtiv, shlo letzorech. Because you must remember again, although there is a license to cook on yamtiv, you're only permitted to cook on yamtiv for ochal nefesh. Ochal nefesh by definition means permitted consumption. Because gid hanosha is aser ba'achila, therefore again the act of cooking the gid hanosha is in and of itself aser. So you're chayiv for cooking on yamtiv. V'lo kemishum mevashal gid b'chalav. You're also chayiv for cooking the gid in milk. Because remember again, gid is basar. Basar b'chalav is a prohibition to cook basar b'chalav. You'll get malchus ultimately for eating basar b'chalav, and the Gemara says, and lastly, top of Chav Beis, and mishum havara, v'loki mishum havara, and you get malchus for ultimately kindling a fire. V'im isa, so the Gemara says, and if it's true that l'maaseh there's no chiluk malachas, that for yamtiv you cannot be chayiv multiple malachas for one act, then mishum havara lo mechayiv. Then ultimately, again, you should not be chayiv for the act of kindling. Why? Because ultimately, again, you're chayiv for the act of bishul. As I both say, the act of bishul and the act of havara is the same maisa. It's an act of what? It's an act of kindling a fire. So if you tell me, yesh chilik melachos, which means that one act could generate multiple liabilities, then I can be chayiv for both bishul and havara. But if you're saying, like we just posited on Amud Beis, that ein chilek melachas by yamtiv, that Rabbi say for yamtiv again, you can't be chayiv multiple liabilities for one action, then how can you be chayiv for both havara and bishul? To which the Gemara says, ein achinami, you're right. Apik havara va'ayil git hanosha shal nevelo. Oh, take out havara, take out kindling, and instead insert in there, they are talking about a git hanosha of nevelo. Therefore, what Rabbi say, the extra prohibition is for nevela consumption. Not only is it basar b'chalav, not only is it right, but it's also nevela. To which the Gemara says, "Ay v'hatani." But we learned, "V'hatani b'chia lo keshtayim al achilaso v'shalosh al bishulo." But yet, one second, Rabbi Chiya said, Rabbi say that the tally is you get two sets of malchus for consumption and three sets of malchus for acts relating to bishul, and if you add in nevela, then what? Then you have three prohibitions of malchus for achila. V'iisa, and if it's true that it's kida nasha of nevela, then the ma'isa again it will be shalosh al achila. So then you'll end up getting three sets of malchus for consumption. Huchayiv, elo apik havara Rather, again, what should you do? Take out, Rabbi said, take out the prohibition of Havara, take out the prohibition or the Isser, ultimately, again, of kindling, and instead put in there that the wood that you're using is what? Is Atzei Asherah. It's Asherah wood. Rabbi, remember again, an Asherah is an Avodah Zorah tree, so put in there that it's Asherah wood. And the prohibition ultimately again will be from here. Follow yidbak biyadcha meuma. And ultimately again, because the pasuk says, Rabbi, that when it comes to avodah zara, you're not permitted to have anything to do with it. So the act ultimately again of using atzei asherah is in and of itself an iser. So the gemara says, Amar Ravacha, Rabbi Ravashi, v'lokin nami. Okay, so v'lokin nami mishum lo savi so'eva el beisecha. So what says? It says the gemara, well, if that's the case, that ultimately again with atzei asherah, and you're using this in your home, so why don't you get malchus for the prohibition of lo savish so'eva be'al be'secha? Do not bring something abominable into your home. Ela hacham askin, and what's the case here? Kigon shebishlo ba'atzei hekdish. Oh, I will say, what's the case? The case over here is ultimately not where it's asherah wood, but rather again it's hekdish. I will say, understand what we're trying to do over here. See, let's how do we get into this mess, this beautiful mess? Remember, again, we had a discussion on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis about Chilik Melachas. They both say, can one act generate multiple liabilities? What the Gemara is suggesting over here is, by Shabbos, yes, by Yom Tiv, no. By Yom Tiv, no. Okay? They both say, so now, the Gemara quoted this case over here of where a person is going ahead and cooking Git HaNasha in Chalav on Yom Tiv. And the Mishnah said, the Brisa says that I'm chayiv multiple times. But two of the things that the Mishnah said that I'm chayiv for is for Havara and for Bishul Shalot Tzarech, the act of kindling and the act of cooking on Yom Tiv. Remember, you could cook on Yom Tiv, but I will say you could only cook for sanctioned acts of consumption. If something is a non-sanctioned act of consumption, either you're cooking treif, right? I will say, a person goes ahead and cooks themselves treif food on Yom Tiv. And says, I'm not mechalal anything. There's a heter of ochel nefesh on Yom Tiv. Sure, there's a heter. Thank you. Right? There's a heter of ochel nefesh. If it's a permitted act of consumption, not if it's tarfus. But also, the problem is to say that I'm chayiv ultimately for havara, right? For havara and for act of kindling and for bishul shlo tzorach means it's the same act. Havar and Bishul are the same act, and yet you're telling me I'm chayiv twice for the same act. That means that there is chiluk malachas on Yom Tiv. So what the Gemara is trying to do is back out of that. And the Gemara is just trying to go ahead and simply substitute another Isser in order to get up to the full tally of Isurim of five sets of malchus. Because what the Mishnah said is there's an act of cooking on Yom Tiv for which you could be chayiv five sets of malchus. We're trying to now back out Havara and just put in something else instead to keep the tally of five. To which the Gemara says, what's the case? What's the case here? He goes, Shebishlo ba'atzei hekdish. Oh, both say the case over here is that the wood that I'm using is hekdish wood. And the prohibition is from here. I'm sorry. So what's the case? So by the Asherah it says, you have to destroy it, you have to burn it. Means do not do this to Hashem your God, which Rabbi says is a reference to what? It's a reference to do not destroy consecrated items. Do not destroy hekdish. So therefore, a person who goes out and uses hekdish wood on Yom Tiv to cook, ultimately, again, is in violation of lo sasu kein l'Hashem elokeichem. And hence, you get to the tally, ultimately, again, of five. Rabbi say, how do we paskin over here by chiluk malachos? This is important. So the Rambam paskins in Hilchos Yom Tiv. This is in Parak Aleph Halacha Gimel. Ha'osa, get ready for this. Ha'osa avos melachos harbei b'yom tov basra achos. I will say, if somebody performs multiple melachos on Yom Tiv with one hasra, kigon, shezara ubana v'sasar v'arag basra achos, eina loke ela achos. I will say, the Rambam brings down even a more dramatic example. The Rambam's example, I will say, is let's say a person goes ahead and does multiple avos melachos within one halam. I will say one hasra. For example, let's say I'm about to plow my field. So Reuven gives me hasra. He says, you're not allowed to plow your field on Yom Tiv. Okay? I plow. I sow. I build. I demolish. I weave. I do a whole bunch of stuff. All b'halam achas. All at one time. I mean, not literally simultaneously, but it means, again, one after the other. But only one hasra. I'm only chayiv once. I'm only going to be chayiv once, I will say. Because ultimately, again, chiluk malachas l'shabbos, bein chiluk malachas l'yamtiv. Because ultimately, again, we only talk about a distinction of malacha, meaning it's only by Shabbos that if you violate multiple malachos behelam echad, in what we'll call in one lapse, that ultimately, again, you'll be chayiv multiple times, that doesn't apply to yamtiv. And I will say, now, this is even a more extreme case. The easier case, of course, is our case, which I will say, for example, if a person were to go ahead, and let's say just using the Bryce's case, of going out and cooking gid hanosha in milk on Yom Tov. Gid hanosha in milk on Yom Tov. Whatever, or basa b'chalav in milk, it doesn't make a difference. So we'll say, so remember again, I'm chai for basa b'chalav. I'm chai for what? Let's talk about all the things that I'm technically doing. I'm kindling, right? I'm kindling. And it's a bishul shel tzorech. So we'll say, how many times will I be chayiv? So I'm not be chayiv for basa b'chalav, but for bishul and for havara, I'll only be chayiv once. Because you can't be chayiv on Yom Tov multiple prohibitions for one action. On Shabbos you could, on Yom Tov you cannot. Good. So he paskin, yesh chiluk melachas b'Shabbos, ein chiluk melachas b'Yom Tov. Beautiful. Says the Gemara. So now we're going back to the Mishnah. So remember again, and again, I think Howard mentioned this after the shir yesterday as well. So remember again, the Mishnah brought up this case where a person could be chayiv eight things, for one act of plowing. So essentially, what the Gemara is going to say is, no, you could actually be chayiv. I mean, you could construct cases. You're actually chayiv many, many more things. For example, the Gemara says, "Maskev Rav Oshia v'leich shav nami hazareh benachal eson." So Rav Oshia says, "Why can't you also include that the guy is playing Rav Oshia benachal eson? What's nachal eson? Rav Oshia egla rufa. You find the person who's murdered in between two cities. So what happens? So the elders of the closest city go ahead and bring a calf. They decapitate the calf by a riverbed, by a valley. So the halacha Rav Oshia is that what? You are never allowed to plow that area again. So let's say the case in the Mishnah is also where the guy's not just plowing a field, but what is he plowing? He's plowing Nachal Eson, in which a case, again, is active plowing is another prohibition. And the violation would be, because the pasuk says, you shall not work it, and you shall not sow that area. The point the Gemara is making over here is, you could construct a case where there's even more than eight prohibitions for the act of plowing. I'll give you another example. Let's add in something else. Let's assume that the guy is also hamochik es Hashem b'halichaso. While the guy is plowing, what does he do? He erases the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He erases, let's say the name of God is written on the ground, right, in some way, or written in some other place. And towards active plowing, he erases the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we'll say, so what would happen? This would be, again, engender another liability. What's the prohibition there? Va'avaratem es shemam. So by Avodah Zarah, it says, you shall destroy the name of Avodah Zarah. And the pasuk says, lo sasu kein Hashem Elokeichem. You shall not go ahead and do this to Hashem, your God. Listen to this. I'll give you another example where there's another prohibition. Let's say the guy who's plowing is a metzora. Now the halacha is that a metzora is not permitted to cut off his sara'as spot. Let's say while he's plowing, he cuts off his sara'as spot, which I will say would then mean what? So again, the Gemara is just trying to build up. The point the Gemara is just making is if you want to construct a case of maximum Isurim, there are many, many, many other ways in which you could go ahead and construct a case where a guy is violating multiple Isurim during this act of plowing. This one is an interesting one. Amrali Abaye, Velech Shov Nami, Hamaziach HaChoshen Me'al Ha'efot, V'Hamasir Bade Aron. This is an interesting one. Let's say again, in a case, it could be where the plower is the Kohen Gadol. Now this is an interesting case. What this literally means is he's moving the Choshen off the Ephod. Remember again, the Kohen Gadol would go out and wear the Ephod, which was a breastplate, and it was affixed to the Ephod. That was the Choshen. It was affixed to the Ephod, which was like an apron. That Choshen had to be anchored in the Ephod, had to be centered on the Ephod. Moving the Choshen, bless you, is in and of itself a biblical prohibition, as an Isser Daraisa. So let's say, again, the guy who's plowing is the Kohen Gadol who moved the Choshen. Now, again, generally, the Big Day Kahuna would not be worn outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll say, it could either be a case where he's wearing the Begadol outside of the Beis HaMikdash, or he wore it inside the Beis HaMikdash, he moved it inside the Beis HaMikdash, then he walked out of the Beis HaMikdash with it. Similarly, again, Hamasir Bade Aron, someone removed the poles from the Aron. We'll say the halacha is that the poles, which normally were used for the transport of the Aron, remained inside of the Aron. The case over here is where the guy removed it. So we'll say again, what exactly this means, whether obviously he moved it while they're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Apparently, again, if he moves it, and let's say again, he keeps them removed, meaning he does not go ahead and return them back to their appropriate spot, it's considered as if he's still in a state of active prohibition. Pas says, you shall not remove the poles, and the choshen shall not move. I'll give you another example. It could be that the guy is using a plow which was constructed from Asherah wood. So what happens if you use a plow constructed from Asherah wood? That's also an Issur D'oraisa. Ultimately, again, no semblance, no part of the Avodah Zarah should be in your hand. Maskif le'ravina. I'll give you another prohibition, that while he's plowing, what is he doing? He's knocking down perfectly good trees. And we'll say, what's the halacha if you knock down perfectly good trees? This, by the way, is the prohibition of Baal Tashchis. Right? So Baal Tashchis ultimately is that what? That you are not, the paradigmatic example of Baal Tashchis is by fruit trees. Right? That the halacha says ultimately, again, you're not permitted to go ahead and knock down fruit trees. So let's say over here that while the guy's plowing, he's also knocking down perfectly good fruit trees, which is in violation of Baal Tashchis, because the pasuk says, "Kimenu sochal v'osal asichros, eat from the trees, but do not destroy the trees." Amrli Rabbi Zeira l'Rabbi, so l'Rabbi Mani, "Balach shav nami kegon da'amar shvua shelo echros biyamtif." I'll give you another example. We'll say, let's say the guy, the plower, said, "I'll take a shvua that I will never plow on yamtif." And we'll say, what is he doing now? He's plowing on yamtif, which means that what? He's violated the Shavuah. So another prohibition. So we'll say, we'll pause here for just a moment. So the Gemara is going to say, no, this case doesn't work. We'll say, the point the Gemara is making over here, just, and this goes back to what we spoke about yesterday, because remember, again, there was an exchange in yesterday's Gemara about how to interpret when the Mishnah says, V'chayiv alav mishum shmone lavin. When the Mishnah says that there's an act of plowing, yesh choresh teram echod, there's a case of where a person could plow one furrow and violate eight lavin. See, remember again, there was a suggestion in the Gemara that maybe eight is not a specific number. Maybe eight just means at least eight, but there's more. To which the Gemara very quickly dismissed that. The Gemara says, no, if the Mishnah is going out of its way to state a number, then what? Then that number must be specific. So the Gemara is looping back to that discussion and saying, no, eight really is just a general number, but if you want to go ahead and what? If you want to go ahead and find other Isurim to lap onto here, you definitely could find others. You know what? So I just got Howard mentioned the after this year, which the Gemara actually doesn't bring this one up. You could bring, there's many more. You could, he's plowing his field and he knocks down his neighbor's posts, right? He knocks down his neighbor's property lines, doesn't it? So let's say what's coming out over here is the Mishnah's number of eight is a number. But in no way does that mean that you can't construct. The Mishnah is giving an example of one act which can result in multiple liabilities. But if you are looking to construct a case of maximum liabilities, you could definitely be more imaginative than the Mishnah. That's the point. Rabbo saying, now the Gemara hits a little bit of a dead end. So the Gemara says, in an effort to try to show an additional Isser that could be incurred, this is very interesting. So the Gemara says, it could also be, if you want to look for another Isser, that the guy who's plowing took a shvua not to plow on Yom Tiv. And now that he's plowing on Yom Tiv, an additional prohibition is what? He's violating his shvua. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam lo chala shvua. To which the Gemara says, no, I'll tell you, that doesn't work. I'll tell you why. Because they're both saying, if a person takes a shvua not to plow on Yom Tiv, that shvua doesn't take effect. Why not? Because the Gemara says, lo chala shvua, Mushva va'omed mehar Sinai. We'll say first wide line, chaf bezim adalef. Because we'll say a person is mushva va'omed. We'll say mushva va'omed ultimately means that a person is already prohibited from plowing on Yom Tov. We'll say again, the concept is a shvua creates, as is going to be our next mesechta, a shvua creates a chalos shem iser. Creates ultimately, again, a state of prohibition. When something is already prohibited, the shvua does not devolve upon that object. So to take a shvua that I'm not going to go ahead and plow on Shabbos, well, it's like saying, I take a shvua that I'm not going to eat tarfus. I take a shvua that I'm not going to drive on Shabbos. A shvua like that is by definition meaningless, since the object is already prohibited. To which the Gemara says, Amalei, so I'll give you a case. Kigon the Amar shvua shelo echrosh bein b'chol bein b'yamtiv. So, I'll give you a case of where I both say where I said, the case where I said, I take a shvua that I won't plow both during the week and on Yom Tov. Now, both say, now, why should that work? Migo de chal alei shvua b'chol, chal alei nam b'yom tiv. Because once the shvua takes effect for the weekday part, it by definition devolves upon the Yom Tov part. As I will say, again, there's a little bit of like a appetizer for our Shavuos days in Mirat Hashem, but there's a concept ultimately again that if you take a Shavuah on something, on two things, and it can devolve upon one thing, the other thing it couldn't devolve upon on its own. Once it devolves upon A, it could also devolve upon B. So if I take a Shavuah not to plow on Yom Tov, that's meaningless. But if I take a Shavuah not to plow on weekday and Yom Tov, since it devolves upon the weekday component, it devolves upon the Yom Tov component as well. Midi di Isa, the Christian Jewish Gemara answers, Midi di Isa b'she'ila lo katani. To which the Gemara says, you're right, but since a Shavuah is subject to annulment, to she'ila, the Mishnah is not including cases, ultimately, again, that are subject to annulment. So the Gemara says, really, is that true? V'lo, v'hari hekdish. Ultimately, again, but yet the Mishnah gave an example by Hekdish of consecrated items. So that's what we'll say. That's subject. You could annul Hekdish. You could go ahead and be, you could go ahead and essentially be poda. You could redeem Hekdish, which is a form of annulment, to which the Gemara says, Bebechar. They're also, we're talking about a case, ultimately, again, of a Bechar animal, where, again, you cannot go ahead and in any way annul or redeem that Hekdish. Vahari Nazir. We'll say, what about the case of Nazirus? Right, to which the Gemara answers, but Nazir Shimshon. Because we'll say, ultimately, again, the case of Nazir Shimshon is a case of Nazirus, which is not subject to annulment, not subject to Hafara, or She'ila. To which the Gemara says, because we'll remember again, we're going back to the case of the Mishnah. Remember again, part of the case of the Mishnah was where the person who was plowing was what? Was a Nazir and a Kohen who was plowing in a cemetery. This is how we got up to the 8. To which the Gemara says, well, if you tell me that the Mishnah is not dealing with anything that's subject to annulment, then ultimately, again, how can you go ahead and how can you be dealing with a Nazir? A Nazir is also subject to annulment. We'll say, annulment is not the right word. You know, a Nazir ultimately, again, has Hatara or Hafara. It's a Neder. So because it's a Neder, ultimately, again, you could annul or you could uproot the Neder. To which the Gemara says, B'Nazir Shimshon. What type of Nazir is Ratim Rabbo say? Was called the Nazir Shimshon. Rabbo say, what's a Nazir Shimshon? If you look at Rashi says, or the Rivan, I should say, the Rivan is about right two lines before the Gemara gets wide, right across in the Rivan. Benazir Shimshon, Ayde Malach Kibal Naziros Alav, Tahu Eno She'ila Detzivoy Shalamadlo. So, remember again, so Nazir Shimshon means someone who's a Nazir Meirechem. He ultimately, again, becomes a Nazir in utero still. So, again, obviously, this type of Nazirus is not subject to any type of annulment. To which the Gemara says, but one second, Nazir Shimshon, Barit Muyele Mesmu. But a Nazir Shimshon Rabosai does not have a prohibition of coming in contact with the dead. Right? We know this. We'll say, how do we know this? How do we know this? Because Shimshon killed a lot of people. Now, obviously, now one could say the truth is he killed non-Jews, Gentiles. There's a whole discussion about Tumah, ultimately, again, by non-Jews. But Lamaisa, again, a Nazir Shimshon is not subject to the prohibition, ultimately, of contact with the dead. Ela haitana iser kolel lesle. Rather, says the Gemara, this Tana does not hold of an Isser Kolel. So we'll say Isser Kolel means an all-inclusive Isser. Which we'll say an example of an Isser Kolel would be this case that we just said before, which is, I take a Shavua not to go ahead and plow during the week and on Yom Tov. So we'll say an Isser Kolel, an encompassing Isser, would say that the same way that the Shavua devolves upon the weekday, it also it's Kolel. It also includes Yom Tov. So if I were to plow on Yom Tov, I'd be chayif twice. What are the two things I'd be chayif for? We'll say number one, chilul Yom Tov, and number two, violating my shvuah. But I will say that's called an iser kolal, an all-encompassing shvuah. Our Tana does not subscribe to the concept of iser kolal. Therefore, again, Abosai, according to our Tana, a shvuah that says I swear that I won't plow during the week and on Yom Tov works for the weekday component, but does not work for the Yom Tov component. And therefore, again, if you were to plow on Yom Tov, you would be chayiv, of course, to the act of plowing on Yom Tov, but not for violation of shvuah. Amar Boshia, Hamar Bia Pshar Psule Mukdashin Lo Kishnar. Abosai is actually a very interesting case. If a person goes ahead and mates a sharp psulei hamukdashim. And I will say, sharp psulei hamukdashim means the following. If you take a look at the Rivan for just a moment, it's the last short line. Hamar bia sharp psulei hamukdashim, shenifta afilu almino loke, shari guf echod, vasal hakosav shnei gufin. The Torah schulin, the Torah kachim yeshav. So this is actually a fascinating discussion. So we'll say, we're talking about over here, a sharp psulei hamukdashim, which means I will say, if you have a shar that was hagdish, that was mukdash, and it developed some type of psul, some type of disqualification. So now what do? You redeem it. You transfer in sanctity onto money. You use that money to purchase another animal. So we'll say, so what can you do with this animal? So this animal, interestingly enough, has almost like a dual identity. On one hand, it's unconsecrated, yet on the other hand, it maintains a vestige of its former consecration. So how does this manifest itself? So look at the Rivan again. Shenifta, so this animal was redeemed. You cannot mate this animal with any other animal, even of its own species. Shari guf echad v'asal kasav shnei gufin. Because this redeemed animal, Rabosai, is almost as if what? Almost as if it's two animals in one. So the Torah schulim, the Torah kachim yishalav. On one hand, it's consecrated. On the other hand, it is kodesh. How so? Yishalav Torah schulim shemoter b'achila michutz lepesach olam moed ki lo hokdash miolam. So we'll say, on one hand, it's unconsecrated, and that what? You're permitted to shecht it and to eat it. V'toras kachim sha'aser begiza v'avodah. But on the other hand, it still retains a vestige of its former consecration. How so? You can't shear it, and you can't work it. Kedarmina b'sifri, b'chala v'asnav sh'chatizbak v'achal tabasar b'ma'abachas. So say, skip down a little bit. Therefore, again, v'hilchach. Asr, Abosai, I'm now 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom of the Rivan. V'hilchach, asr l'harbiyo, afilu immino. Therefore, Abosai, you cannot mate it even with its own species. Mishum kilayim. Abosai, this is wild. Because it is a forbidden mixture of species. How so? Shemar biya chulin al kodshim, o kodshim al chulin. Because Rabbi say, what happens? Because you're mating hekdish with chol and chol with hekdish. The idea over here is that since this animal has both a chol and hekdish component to it, there's no other animal which you can mate it with. Since it has these two identities, to mate it with something else, even of its own species, will be a form of kilayim. So that's Rav Oshia. So therefore, Rabbi say, you go in and get two sets of malchus. Right? What do you go in and you get? Therefore, you'll get two sets of malchus for mating this animal. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak says something amazing. Hamanig b'shar psulei mukdashin loke. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, even Rabbi say what? Even Hamanig b'shar psulei mukdashin. Rabbi say, even ultimately, again, if one goes ahead and utilizes this animal in some way, you will also get malchus. Rabbi say, this is, if you pull your plow with this animal, you'll also get malchus. Why? Shari guf echatu v'asal kasa shnei gufin. Rabbi say, it's actually a very dramatic case. If you were to plow with this animal, Rabbi say, that would be the equivalent of plowing with animals of two different species. And therefore, the halacha is you're not allowed to plow with animals of two different species together. That's also a form of kilayim. If you take this sharp psulei hamukdashin and you plow with it, ultimately, again, it's as if you're plowing with two different animals, and you'll get malchus as well. I will say, bottom line, is what Rav Moshe is introducing us to, is that sharp psulei hamukdashin ultimately is what? Ultimately, again, it's considered like two animals in one. Because of that, you cannot mate it with any other animal, even of its own species. Because of that, if you were to work it, which I will say is prohibited in and of itself, because that's a vestige of its former Kedusha, it would actually be chayef for kilayim. It would be chayef for the equivalent of working or plowing with two distinct animals. Incredible. Says the Mishnah, Kama malkinos, Rabbi say, how many malkus do we give to a person who deserves malkus? Arboim chasra achos. Rabbi say, we give him 39 malkus, 40 minus 1. Shneimar, b'mispar arboim. So literally the pasuk says, we give a malchus in the number 40. What does number 40 mean? Minyan shu samach l'arba. It means a number close to 40. Rabbi Huda says, arboim shlemos uloke. He gets, so we'll say, 40 complete malchus. Ve'echan uloke. We'll say, where does he, ve'echan uloke esay yisera. Where does he get the extra? So according to Rabbi Huda, he gets full 40. Where is the 40th lash? bank seifa between his shoulders. Between his shoulders. In om, we'll say, we'll see what that means in just a moment. In om, we'll say the halacha is that when figuring out the number of malchus to give the individual, it has to be a number divisible by three. Amdu ala kabel arboim, veloke mixas. We'll say, if Beis Din, now remember there was a court doctor who would assess how many malchus he could get. So let's say Beis Din said he could withstand 40 malchus. And then what happens? Va'amdu shenyachol kabel. I'm sorry. Veloke mixas. We'll say they gave some of the malchus. Va'amdu shenyachol kabel arboim. And we'll say then mid-lashing, they reassess and they say, you know what? He can't get 40. He can't get 40. What's the halacha? Potter. Ultimately, again, he's potter. Even though the original assessment was for 40 or for 39, whichever one it is, they started lashing him. And then they realized that what? He can't take any more. It's fine. They don't like have to wait for him to recover. And that they whatever he got, and he's potter. In other words, he's got his punishment. Now the Rivan points out to here, if you look on the top of Chav Beis and with Beis, Va'asar, Va'amru, She'in Yachal, Kabel Potter, Techevan, Denisbaze, Be'bezdin, V'loka, Ktsas, Sagile, Bahachi. Rabosa is actually very important. Lemais, again, the point of Malchus Rabosa is degradation, right? Is that he should be degraded for his Aveira. Once he's received Malchus, so the degradation has occurred, which Rabosa, by definition, means that even though they said he was originally going to get 40, then five lashes and they say he can't take anymore, fine, the degradation has been accomplished, doesn't have to get anymore. Now, look at the rest of the Rash, the Rivan. He says, however, avalo loke ela amdul arbon because of amdu shen yachal le kabo klum lo miftar de ein rashon le gra omen ela loke acharzman. So we'll say it's actually very important because we're going to see this later on. Let's say again, Bazin says, you know what? He gets 40 malchus. Then happens, we'll say right when they're about to go ahead and give him the malchus, he's under the weather. He's got post nasal drip, right? And they say, you know what? He can't go ahead and get malchus under this condition. So what happens in that kind of situation? So we wait till he recovers, and then we flog him. The idea that the Mishnah is trying to highlight over Rabosei is the following. If they start to flog him, and then for some reason his health situation deteriorates, and they can't flog him anymore, once he's been flogged, he's Yotzezai, meaning he's fulfilled, he's gotten his punishment, and he's done. However, if they said that he's supposed to get punished, to get flogged, but they were never able to carry out the punishment because he got sick, then what? Then we wait for him to recover, and we give him the malchus. Then, so the Gemara says the following: I'm doing the kabbal shmonasar umishalaka. I'm rushiyachol the kabbal arbaim pater. We'll say on the flip side. Listen to this. Let's say court assessed him; he can get 18 malchus. 18 malchus in, he's still good. He's cracking jokes. He's fine. The doctor says, you know what? Okay, he can. I realize now he can withstand 40. We'll say that we don't do. In other words, we never add on to the original assessment, even if what. Even if it turns out that he can, in fact, handle more. So again, if they assessed him for more, and then mid-flogging, they realize he can only handle less, whatever he got, and then we stop. If mid-flogging, they realize he can handle more, we never add on to the original assessment. Says the Gemara. My time. I will say, what's the reason for the opinion who says that you get 39 malchus? Iksiv arboim b'mispar, hava amina arboim b'minyana. If it would have said the number 40, arboim b'mispar, then I would have said 40. Hashto d'chsib b'mispar arboim. So I will say, the lashon of b'mispar arboim in the number 40, minyan shu sochim is arboim, means a number that leads up to 40. Ultimately, again, meaning what Rabbi say? 39 malchus. So the thing I was picking up on is, the lashon of b'mispar arboim is a strange lashon in the number 40. So the number 40, Chazal understands to mean in the range of 40. What's in the range of 40? 39. Amar Rava says, it's an amazing Gemara. Amar Rava, kama tipshoi shar inshi. Look how foolish people are. Dekaimi mikame sefer Torah. People stand up for a sefer Torah. Velokaimi mikame gaver rabo. And they don't stand up for tamdi chachamim. Dilu sefer Torah ksiv arboim. Rava says, now listen to this. Rivan points out, now why don't people stand up for tamdi chachamim? Because they say, oh, the rabbis, right? The rabbis this, the rabbis that. What they don't realize is what? They don't stand up for the rabbanim, for the tamid chachamim, because they think, what do they do for us? What do they do for us? Everything they do for their own covet. And yet, Torah says, 40 malchus, v'asi rabbanan basir chada. And the rabbanan ultimately, again, saved us a lash. Right? So again, Rava says, people think that Rabbanim are just looking out for themselves, they're just self-serving, but they don't realize that at the end of the day, look, the Torah HaKadosh said 40. They at least found a way to make it 39. Incredible Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbanim Shalom, so it says on the flip side, it's 40 complete Malkis. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak, my time to Rabbi Yehuda. What's the logic of Rabbi Yehuda? Dichsiv, Ma'amako Sa'ila Ben Yodecha. So both again, the Gemara is quoting over here, the pasuk from Zechariah, Mahamako Sa'ila Ben Yodecha, V'amar Sher Kisi Beis Ma'avai. So again, Kosh Baruch Hu will say, what are those lashes between your arms? V'amar Sher Kisi, or between your hands. They both say, between your hands in this context really means between your shoulders. V'amar Sher Kisi Beis Ma'avai. It says, it's the lashes I received in the house of the one who loved me. So I'll say, ultimately again, what Rabbi Yehuda ultimately sees over here is a reference to the lashes, between the shoulders, to which the Gemara out that it's a complete 40. He said again, he refers to the lashes ultimately again between the shoulders. So again, as we're going to see in just a little bit, I will say the 40th lash is the one given between the shoulders. The other 39 are divided up in different places. He sees a reference to a lash. What Rabbi Yehuda sees in this pasuk is a reference to a lash administered between the shoulders. Here's the problem. Out of the 39, none of them are administered between the shoulders. Must be a reference to what? To the 40th lash. That's where he learns it out from. For Rabbanan, the Rabbanan say, no, what does that refer to? Hahu betinokos shall base Rabban hu dichsiv. They both say, that lash is a reference to the lash that we give the kids in yeshiva. Right? That's a reference. They both say, the assumption for whatever, although it sounds strange to us, the lash between the shoulders apparently is not so painful. I don't know. But right, it's not. So they both say, that non-painful, that little zetz, that's what we give the kids in yeshiva, or at least that's what they used to give the kids in yeshiva. We don't, we should not, and we cannot do that today. I would say, so again, I want to go on the record as saying that. It does not work. It does not work for our dar. So I would say, so the idea over here is, so the Rabbanan understand, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, he learns out the 40th lash. 40th lash. I would say, I just want to take the opportunity to officially welcome Yehuda Yosef Masser back to the shir. A mazel tov, and welcome. Okay, so I'll say, so good. Let's go right there. So the Gemara says the following. Hahu, that was your 10 seconds of fame, my friend. That's it, it's done. Hey, just like everybody else. Okay, so it says the Gemara, Hahu tinokos shal beis rabban hu dichsiv. So we'll say, so again, the other opinion says, no, that is a reference ultimately, again, to the malchus that we give children in yeshiva in order to go ahead and get them to pay attention. Fine. Ein omdin ele b'makos ha'ru'yo. So we'll say, remember again, so, and this is very interesting now. We only go ahead and we assess, the court has to assess, ultimately, how many malchus the person is capable of withstanding. Loka in lo loka lo. Now we'll say, now remember again, so the Mishnah brought down a very interesting case where we begin to, we assess. Reuven could go out and take 25 malchus. Then what happens? 10 malchus in, the guy is plotting. So we stop. We don't give him any more. So the Gemara says, loka in lo loka lo. Meaning, when do we stop? When do we stop? When already we began to give malchus. So once we started the malchus, then I'll say ultimately again, if he can't take anymore, we stop, and there's no need to make up the rest. Because once he's been flogged, we're done. On the flip side, lo loka lo. On the flip side, if we assessed him for a certain number of malchus, then what Rabbi say? Then let's say you couldn't do it because he wasn't feeling well. Then what? Then we wait till he recovers. Ultimately, again, and we give him the malchus or minu. But raise a kasha. Amdula kabal arboim. If the Bezin went ahead and assessed that he could take 40 malchus, the chazur va'amdur shen yachal kabal arboim. And then Bezin said, no, he can't take 40, 39, whichever one it is. Putter. Ultimately, again, he is putter. Amdula kabal shmona asrei. But on the flip side, if Bezin said that lemaisa again, he could go ahead and he could withstand 18 malchus. And then what happens? Then they reassessed and they said that what? He could take 40. So Potter, he is Potter. So we'll say, so what's going on over here? Meaning both cases, you have an initial assessment and then a secondary assessment. All right, so we'll say, so in the initial assessment, ultimately, again, they said he could take more, and then they said he could take less. So what's going on over here? Hamda Abdul Yomi. Rabbi say case number one ultimately again is when they reassessed for that day. Hadda Abdul Lamacha Uliyoma Ochra. The second day, I will say ultimately again is where they assess for tomorrow or for a later day. So we'll say, what does this mean? So the Gemara is talking about over here is the following: that Lamaisa, when Bezin makes an assessment today and they carry out the Malkus that day, we assume the assessment is correct. When Bezin goes in and makes an assessment today, but the Malkus is not going to be administered until a later date, then what? it's possible that lemaisa, again, the circumstances changed, the person's situation changed, and therefore, again, the first act, the first assessment in and of itself was flawed. I will say, how do we see this halacha lemaisa? Look what the Rambam writes. I'm going to read this to you. Amdua hayom sheilak yeshtei mesrei v'lo akula ad lemachar v'haryu lemachar yochal akabo shmona esrei ein alok yeshtei mesrei. I'm supposed to listen to this. Beis Din went ahead and assessed him. We'll call it on Monday. And on Monday, Beis Din said that he could get 12 malchus. But they didn't give him malchus until the next day, Tuesday. And on Tuesday, they said that he could really withstand 18 malchus. So we'll say, what's the halacha? The halacha is we only give him the 12. We only give him the 12. So we assess him on Monday. Don't flog him until Tuesday. Tuesday, the court doctor looks at him and says, you know what, he really could handle 18. We only give him 12, the Monday assessment. However, watch this. Listen to this. However, if Beis Din went ahead and said, right, let's say it's Monday. Beis Din says, okay, tomorrow we're going to give him 12 malchus. But they don't end up flogging him until Wednesday. And on Wednesday, they say, you know what? He could really take 18. We give him 18. Why, Rabbi Hussein? Shari b'shasa omid lo amdua lokos el la'achar zman v'chol ki yotze bazeh. Rabbi Hussein, essentially what the Rambam says is like this. Lemaisa, again, when the assessment to flog the individual was for now, but for some reason the punishment wasn't carried out until a later date, then lemaisa what? Then lemaisa, again, we keep with the initial assessment. When to begin with, Beis Din said we're not going to administer the punishment until a later date. There's almost a recognition that what? That we're going ahead and we're giving an assessment now, but that assessment will have to be reassessed at the date that we actually carry out the actual punishment. Okay, says the Mishnah. Avra averu she'ish bo shnei lavin. We will say if a person violates an aver that has two prohibitions associated with it. So amdua omet echad loke upater. So let's listen to this. In this case, the individual ultimately, again, has gone ahead and done one act that results in two prohibitions. They will say, what's the one act that results in two prohibitions? For example, he plows with a shor and a chamor, an ox and a cow together, and also it's klal yakerev. So one thing which results in two prohibitions. So let's say, what happens? Let's say now there's two violations. Both of them have malchus. So what happens? They bring him to Beis Din. Beis Din does, and Beis Din ends up sentencing him to one set of malchus. So we'll say if he gives one set of malchus, lokeo pater, ultimately again he can get one set of malchus and he'll be pater. Ve'imlav, lokeo musabe v'chozalke. But we'll say if Beis Din did not give him one sentencing, but ultimately sentenced him twice, then what? He'll get malchus A, we give him time to recover however long that takes, and then we'll give him malchus B afterwards. Says the Gemara v'atanyo, ein omdin omed echad l'shnei lavin. But one second, we learned that what Rabbi was saying, that you cannot go ahead and get one assessment for two lavin. Rabbi will say, if you violate two lavin, and both of them have their own set of malchus, one set of malchus cannot suffice for two prohibitions. In other words, you have to get two sets of malchus. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshes lo kasha, ham do amdua la arboim v'chado, ha do amdua la arboim v'tarti. Rabbi will say, watch this. The minimum number of malchus that one could receive in order to have satisfied a punishment of malchus, we'll say, is how many? Just doesn't have how many. Based on what we saw before, that your malchus have to be divisible by three. So we come to the conclusion that the minimum number of malchus to satisfy the punishment of the malchus is three. So watch this. If Beis Din sent it, so let's say again, that's our case. Reuven went ahead and plowed with an ox and a cow together, prohibition one, and he plowed klal yakerem, wheat and vines together. So that's the two simultaneous prohibitions, which means he's done one act which carries with it two malchus penalties. He comes to Beis Din. So we'll say the easiest way to Beis Din is say, you're going to be flogged twice. So we're going to flog you once, give you a couple of days to rest up, then we'll see you back here again for your second act of flogging. However, again, there is a way where Beis Din could go ahead and administer one comprehensive punishment. I will say how. If they give him a minimum of 42 malchus. I will say, what does 42 malchus represent? 42 malchus represents 39 plus 3. So 39 plus 3 would be the malchus from the first prohibition, plus a minimum of 3 to satisfy the second prohibition. However, if they only sentenced him to 41, then what's Rabbi saying? the Nebuch, what's ended up happening over here is they flogged him too much for the first prohibition, but what? Not enough to satisfy ultimately the second prohibition. So as I say, if they give him 42, then the Maaseh, that amount, now again, you'll say, but 42 is in violation of not adding on to the Malkus. No, it's not. Because 42 ultimately, again, will be viewed ultimately as two sets of Malkus, satisfying the criteria for the two punishments. So we'll have to, okay, I'm gonna record the Mishnah a little bit. Amir Tzah Hashem. All right, you know what? We'll see. Is Wednesday a short day? Oh, last half. Good. Okay. We'll see. We'll start from the Mishnah. Amir Tzah Hashem tomorrow. We'll be good. We'll start from the Mishnah. Shkoyach.